In a warehouse just outside Trollhättan, Sweden, sits the last Saab 9-3 ever built. It rolled off the production line on April 26, 2011, painted in glacier blue metallic, and never found a buyer. The factory floor where it was assembled is silent now. The assembly robots are frozen mid-motion. Someone left a half-drunk coffee cup on a workstation. It looks like everyone simply vanished. But this isn't a story about a company that failed because it made bad cars. This is about a company that died because it made cars that were too good for its own survival. For 7 decades, Saab Automobile built some of the safest, most innovative vehicles on the road. It pioneered turbocharging for mainstream cars. It invented heated seats. Its engineers designed crash safety features that later became industry standard. And yet, on December 19, 2011, the Swedish District Court declared Saab Automobile bankrupt, ending production forever. What killed Saab wasn't incompetence. It was something far more unusual. A perfect storm of corporate ownership, impossible brand positioning, and an engineering culture so uncompromising, it refused to build the cars customers would actually buy in large enough numbers to survive. This is the story of how success became a death sentence. Saab Automobile's origin explains everything about why it failed. The company's full name, Svenska Aeroplan Aktiebolaget, translates to Swedish Airplane Limited Company. Founded in 1937, as Sweden faced the growing threat of Nazi Germany, Saab built fighter jets and bombers. By the end of World War II, Saab engineers had developed some of Europe's most advanced military aircraft, including the Saab 21, a propeller fighter that could be retrofitted with a jet engine. But when the war ended, military contracts dried up. Saab's management faced a choice: downsize dramatically or find a peacetime product. In 1945, they chose an improbable pivot. 16 Saab aircraft engineers, none with any automotive experience, were assigned to design a car. These weren't car people thinking about market segments and profit margins. They were aeronautical engineers who approached automobile design the same way they approached building aircraft, obsessed with aerodynamics, structural integrity, and occupant safety in a crash. The project leader, Gunnar Ljungström, had spent the war calculating stress loads on bomber fuselages. Now he applied the same principles to a passenger sedan. The result was the Saab 92, unveiled in 1949. It looked like nothing else on the road, a teardrop-shaped two-door sedan with a drag coefficient that wouldn't be matched by mainstream manufacturers for another 3 decades. The body was reinforced with aircraft-grade structural principles. The windshield was curved for better aerodynamics and visibility. Under the hood sat a two-stroke engine derived from a German DKW design, producing just 25 horsepower. But the car's slippery shape meant it could cruise comfortably at highway speeds while burning minimal fuel. Swedish buyers loved it. The Saab 92 became a cult favorite among professionals and intellectuals, doctors, architects, engineers, people who appreciated clever design. Within 5 years, Saab sold more than 20,000 units, remarkable for a small Swedish company competing against established European manufacturers. But here's what mattered most. From the very beginning, Saab built cars for people who valued engineering purity over mass market appeal. This would define everything that followed. By the 1970s, Saab had carved out a profitable niche. The company sold roughly 100,000 cars annually, mostly in Scandinavia and increasingly in the United States, where Saab became the thinking person's alternative to BMW or Volvo. The Saab 99, introduced in 1968, was praised by automotive journalists for its safety innovations, including a passenger compartment designed as a protective cage, headlight washers, and a split braking system. But in 1973, the oil crisis hit. Fuel prices spiked. Buyers suddenly cared about efficiency more than power. Detroit responded by choking engines with emission controls that gutted performance. European manufacturers downsized engines. Saab's engineer saw a different solution. Turbocharging had existed since the early 1900s, primarily in aircraft and racing applications. The principle was simple. Use exhaust gases to spin a turbine that forces more air into the engine, allowing it to burn more fuel and produce more power without increasing displacement. Porsche had experimented with turbos in racing, but no mainstream manufacturer had successfully brought turbocharging to everyday cars. The technology was considered too expensive, too complex, and too unreliable for regular drivers. Saab's engineers, many of whom still had backgrounds in aviation, knew turbos intimately from fighter jets. In 1976, they began testing a turbocharged version of the Saab 99. The challenges were immense: managing heat, preventing engine knock, designing a turbo system that could survive 100,000 miles of daily driving. On February 10, 1977, Saab unveiled the 99 Turbo at the Stockholm Auto Show. It was a revolution. The car took a 2.0-liter four-cylinder engine and, with turbocharging, produced 145 horsepower, performance that matched much larger engines while maintaining reasonable fuel economy. Automotive journalists were stunned. Rodentrack called it a triumph of engineering over convention. The 99 Turbo became a legend. It pioneered the concept of the sleeper, a modest-looking sedan that could humiliate sports cars at stoplights. More importantly, it established turbocharging as a viable technology for everyday cars. Within a decade, nearly every major manufacturer offered turbocharged models. Saab had, once again, proven that pure engineering innovation could win. But there was a problem embedded in this success. Saab had reinforced its identity as an engineer's brand, not a volume seller's brand. By the mid-1980s, Saab Automobile faced a crisis. Development costs for new models were skyrocketing. The company sold roughly 130,000 cars annually, profitable but too small to fund next-generation platforms independently. Saab's parent company, Saab Scania, wanted to focus on trucks and aerospace. The automobile division needed a partner. In December 1989, General Motors purchased 50% of Saab Automobile for $600 million. The deal promised resources and scale. GM would provide platform engineering, supply chain efficiencies, and global distribution. Saab would maintain design independence and Swedish identity. It sounded perfect on paper. In practice, it was a cultural disaster. GM's philosophy was standardization and cost efficiency. The company built cars on shared platforms, using common components across multiple brands to maximize economies of scale. Chevrolet, Pontiac, Buick, Oldsmobile, Cadillac all use variations of the same basic architectures. To GM's executives, Saab was simply another brand to slot into the system. Saab's engineers saw